Well, Mossy, I know we've all been really looking forward to this next interview a lot this morning. Brian Gorgian, and you can make a fair claim that he is one of the greatest coaches that this country has ever had in any sport. He's won a record 6 NBL championships. He's had a decorated career spanning 20 years. You know, his winning strike rate, behold this, 70%, which is just quite extraordinary. A 6-time NBL Coach of the Year. He's also coached the Boomers pretty much through the decade of the 2000s. And of course, he returned last year to help the national side to their first ever Olympic medal with bronze in Tokyo. He's in his second season with the Illawarra Hawks, and they have a great strike rate as well. They're currently sitting third on the ladder at 4-2 this morning. It's a real pleasure to talk to Brian Gorgian. Hi, Brian. Good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Let's start with the Hawks. Gee, it's going to really test your mettle and all of this experience that I've just mentioned as a coach, because you have to play a lot of catch-up, missing a lot of games with COVID. You face a pretty daunting prospect of playing 5 games in 12 days, and 2 of those matches come against the Perth Wildcats, who are really the team to beat, even though that they lost last night. So it's a pretty tough run for you guys.
Yeah, the whole coming back again from being in China and overseas and coming back to this competition last year was kind of alarming for me. In the fact that, you know, when I was in China or I've done stuff overseas, you've always got those games on your schedule where, you know, in China you had 20 teams and you have a team coming in and they've never beaten you. You know, they're just a lesser opponent. You can play everybody. You can get that win and get that momentum. This league last year, the bottom team in it that finished bottom, you know, it's tied with 2 minutes to go. The top team, you know, you're in the same situation. And this year, I find it more daunting. You know, you look at the situation last night with Adelaide and Perth, you know, probably the best team in it. And they go to Adelaide, they're down 20 at halftime. So my point being is there's no easy games. Everything looks daunting as a coach. It's like, where's the next win there? And then you've got all the situation, like you said, with the stop start, dealing with COVID in spades as opposed to last year. And again, I'm not upset about that. I just find this really challenging.
Brian, let's talk about Sunday's loss to Melbourne United, where Matthew Dellavedova just put on an insane shooting display. Whilst your side was on the losing end by 4 points, you were the Boomers coach with Matthew Dellavedova. Do you have a moment where you just watch him when he's shooting the lights out and think, God, he's good for our country, or you're just more just focused on Illawarra?
More just focused on Illawarra. You know, but in all of that, you know, it's a great example of, you know, a lot of times you say as a coach and you come into the locker room and you go through the game plan and you say, we're going to pick our poison. And you've got Goulding, you've got Barlow, you've got Akul at the center position and their fantastic new import, you know, that are all putting up big numbers. And Deli's kind of he's a winner. You know, he plays defense. He's a facilitator. So we call him shift guys. When he doesn't have the ball, get off him. He was 3-for-22 coming into the game from the 3-point line. When he was winning the national team, he was immense and instrumental in us getting that medal. But everybody played off him on the 3-point line because it's not his expertise. And, you know, full credit to him. It was alarming, you know, the shots he was hitting. And we did try to make an adjustment in the second half, but he hit not only threes, but tough threes. And, you know, he does so many other things. So you're right. I mean, at the end of the game, during the game, you want to, you know, it's driving you crazy. You want to do everything you can to win. But afterwards, not only him, but, you know, Goulding, when you go up and you play Sobey, you know, Patty had the mantra of, you know, rose gold, you know, gold vibes only. That's what I feel when the game's over. You want to give him a hug and say, you know, man, I love you. You know, those memories will never go away. They're always special. But again, they can't get in the way of leading into it and competing and trying to win. And obviously, he's on that same page.
Brian, Phil Moss here. Pleasure to have you on this morning. I've always, as a fellow coach, really admired you from afar, your coaching mindset and how you are with your players and your staff. I really feel for young coaches at the moment at the professional level, particularly going through this whole COVID experience. You mentioned some of the challenges in the Australian League. How have you managed this COVID situation as a hugely experienced coach?
I just think, you know, the mindset of, you know, a simple one said to me, you know, by another, you pick times and you pick your circle of influence. And I try as a coach when this period of time's going on, that when I talk to somebody, I'm talking to you today and I hang up the phone, I'm jacked up, I'm juiced. I don't want to have people around me that are talking about COVID and what are we going to do? And isn't this horrible? We haven't played in 25 days. And I don't want to feed that to my team. And I think, you know, that's been such a, you know, I've been around, you know, and it's interesting that, you know, we have a little Zoom conversation with coaches and, you know, Luke Beveridge, Eddie Jones. I get off the phone with guys like that, and I'm just excited about the challenges and where I can get better at and where I can get my team better at. So during the 10-day break when nobody can leave their room and long discussions, what do you do with this 10 days? And you can touch each player individually and do a lot more with them individually than you can when you're dealing with the team setting. Video, core strength, and then coming out of the 10-day break with a plan of how you move forward during those days leading into the first game. Here's what we're weak at. Here's what we're not doing well. You know, moving forward with the leadership situation. So, try not during all of this that you're constantly moving forward some way, no days being wasted.
Mm. But, of course, COVID was effectively a part of your decision to stay here and coach the Illawarra Hawks and not be part of the World Cup qualifiers in February. Just talk about that process and how it's all worked, because I know you've worked obviously closely with Basketball Australia in finding the replacement and the best man for the job also.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was coming out of, again, being away from the Boomers and coming back when I always felt like going into Beijing or going into Athens, that when we got the Boomers together, there was real work on trying to get the top players, you know, committed to the games. You know, getting it was a real process, going around and touching each guy and working at that. Where when I came to this, it was Patty and Joe and Deli and that group. It was like it's like you serve your country. You know, there's no everybody that you want is available. It's your pick. And 99% of I need you, they're in. It's just something that's developed over a 12-year period. So you take that to now, these qualifying series, I felt coming in that there was a responsibility for me to get the best NBL players to play in this. And I can't ask them to do that if I'm not going to coach it. So in honesty, the plan was for me to coach, to get the Delis, to get the Duoffs, Sprawlings, to get those guys and take the best group available and play. But the mark was no, you don't miss games. And that's what we told those players. That's what we told the coaches we were selecting, that no NBL games would be missed. And due to this outbreak and the season stopping, the NBL had no option but to play through. So that changed. I can't ask the players to, you know, leave United, leave the Hawks, leave their club team and miss games. Just like the NBA, you can't do that. So it went to the next stage, development players and Rob Beveridge, who's got an international pedigree, has coached junior teams, been an assistant for me, coached overseas, highly qualified, was available. So we've done very well there. But again, China, Japan, the Philippines, the teams we're playing, the season closes down for a month and they go into camp and they take this. They want to qualify. They want to make the world. It's serious. So to walk in there with a development team that hasn't practiced is going to be a huge challenge, and it's not something that we want as a steady diet if we're going to be where we want to be as a national program.
It's interesting that you talk about that depth with the Boomers and the importance of it, because from outsiders looking in, we see a terrific Boomer side that won that bronze medal in Tokyo, stacked with NBA talent, so much so we're even talking about young guys like Josh Giddey, who came through the NBL system before lighting it up at the moment in the NBA as well. So you see it holistically, that if we are to get that gold medal, it goes beyond just the NBA?
100%. So much so. And I think there's a direct parallel between the success of the club, the national program, and their domestic league. I mean, the best competition in the world is the NBA. That's the gold medal. And then there's the Euro League. And then I think we're right there. And again, 12 years ago, we weren't medalists. So what's going on? I look at it more like when I got that medal, it's personally. So when the medals, you look at your medal and you say, this is so much, so many people involved in this, the junior program, the NBL one, center of excellence, all these things lead in. I just get the group together for a small period of time and go play. But the development, the getting the right people attracted to the game, getting their skills developed, moving them to where they need to be. I didn't get handed this for Beijing. I didn't get handed this for Ashraf Athlon. 12 years later, you look at the athletes that we got excited by basketball, playing basketball, the Sudanese community, the Aboriginal community, the top Australian players in not playing cricket, not playing footy, being attracted to basketball is a big change in the 12 years that I've been away. Mm. And full credit to, just like I said, those people that are involved.
Brian, we had you on the Big Sports Breakfast last year, and even now when we listen to you talk and how much you invest in your players and their development, and I still just can't help but wish that Ben Simmons had been under your guidance at the Tokyo Olympics alongside Patty Mills to just help with his mindset of where he is and help just build up his confidence and raise his playing stock so that he can get the best out of himself over in the NBA.
No, I mean, I don't. It's certainly, again, the Boomers' culture and the Boomers' where they're going and where they went. I'm just a freckle on this. Again, there was 12 years, and I came in the last minute. But in all honesty, the Simmons and the Simmons family, there's a background there. My brother coached him at Box Hill when he was a young kid, and I met him when he was 14 years old. And I have nothing but respect for that family, for Dave, when he played for the Melbourne Tigers. He was a class act. He was a great player. His son's been nothing but tremendous around my family. My father's 90, treated my dad. Incredible. And how he was with my brother, and my brother won championship after championship with him. So he is a tremendous kid. He's a tremendous basketball player. And when I came into that environment and I looked at it, I thought myself, not me, I'm just looking at what Patty and Joe, when I walked into the Irvine drop-in center, I go, God, this would be good for Ben. This would be so good for Ben. And I told him that. And the other point I made to him is, I'm not recruiting you. I just think this is good for you. I know you're dealing with some stuff right now, and the timing might not be right. But, man, this would be, and as you said, and as everybody can see, being around those guys, I just think the game of basketball would be fun for him again. And, again, the timing was a little bit difficult with how the season ended with Philadelphia, and you can see where it's carried on to now. But those doors are open, and I know someday he's going to play with the Boomers, and it's going to be great for our country, and it's going to be great for him.
Yeah, I can see why your players love playing for you. You talk about the person first, the player and the family, and then the player a distant third. But, Brian, I can't let you go without asking you for some advice for young coaches just starting their coaching careers at the professional level. What a couple of tips you can give them?
The number one thing to me is coaching, and I remember my dad, when I was on the driveway and I was a young kid, and I came from an all-white area, and it was called Lily White Glendale. And I play on the playground and I practice, and my dad took me in a car when I was 12 years old. He said, "You want to play this game for real?" I said, "Dad, I love it. I want to shoot on the driveway all day." Pick me up, and he drove me down into inner city LA, Watts. And all the Afro-American kids were playing out on the playground. And I just sat in the car and watched these kids play up and down. And I'm looking, I was just amazed. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. He drove me over about an hour away. We went to Disneyland and we hung out at Disneyland the whole day. 6 o'clock at night, we had dinner. He puts me in the car, and instead of driving home up to get on the freeway, we turn, we go back into Watts. Those kids are still playing. And he turns and looks at me and he said, "If you want to be good, you got to play against the best. And that's what you got to be." And so there's no shortage for a coach, for a basketball player, work ethic and the amount of time that you put in and to practice against the best. And then when you look at the coaching, the same advice. Find somebody that I mentioned the names to you, Luke Beveridge, Eddie Jones, Neil Craig, Nathan Buckley. I've always tried to surround, going back to David Park, and always trying to surround myself with people that are better than me that you can learn from as a player and a coach.
Brian, that's from a coach perspective. What about for just us mere mortals, listeners today? I mean, you have a very positive mindset, but to achieve so many things that you have done, and I'm sure you've got so much you still want to achieve, a positive mindset is obviously vitally important, but goal setting, is that something that you do for yourself? What is your process?
I really try to keep it simple, as I just did there, and maybe it's old school, but, you know, again, when I started coaching, you know, go and find a sport they're good at. This was in America that they're good at, and learn from the best. Look at your competition, and whatever they're doing, do more. If they get up at 9 o'clock, you get up at 6 o'clock. So I've always had you can see when I coach the game, I never sit down. I'm always up and down the sidelines. I'm always engaged at practice. It's like, and I'll sit sometimes in the locker room before a practice because you don't always feel like it, and motivate myself. Hey, man, I'm not going to have a good practice if I don't bring it. I'm not going to have a good practice, or we're not going to be good if I'm not doing more than the opposition. So it's a lot of times it's simple things. Are you putting the work in? Are you putting the energy in? Are you motivated to bringing that to practice? And again, I'm not perfect, but I try to be good in those areas.
Well, do you punch the clock? What do you like when you go home and you're with the family? Can you switch off?
Well, you know, it's interesting. As I've got older, I'm not around the family. I've been in China for 12 years, so my wife would come periodically, and right now, I'll be honest, my day starts at 5 o'clock, and I was up at 5, worked out 5:30 to 6:37, then I'm back here, and then I'm at the court by 9 o'clock, and then by 6 o'clock at night, I'm finished with basketball, make a nice meal, relax, hit the phones, talk to people, and when I come home right now, it's just me. And it's been that way. My daughter's older now. She's got her own family. And my wife comes and goes because she's a grandmother now. So I spend a lot of time on my own. And I'm very fortunate. I'm good there. And I also got a lot of time to myself.
Well, Brian, it's an interesting insight to your process and your success, which you have had so much of, and hopefully that will continue with the Illawarra Hawks, as I mentioned, doing very well this season, third on the NBL ladder, and what's been a very difficult season so far, and hopefully things can get on track and success and many wins ahead for Illawarra this season. So a real pleasure speaking to you this morning.
Thank you. Enjoy your show. Thank you.